the reason we take so few weddings, I started to say, is we want to get to know our couples really, really well. I think that creating a beautiful environment is wonderful, but creating an environment that actually speaks to the couple and shows who they are is essential.
Welcome to The Wedding Biz with Andy Kushner, the show about the global wedding business and your backstage pass to the happily ever after world of professional dream makers.
I gave you my heart on a silver platter, 'cause you made my dreams come true. It won't crack, baby, it'll never shatter.
Hey everyone, it's Andy Kushner, host of The Wedding Biz. I'm excited because when this episode is released, I will be in Los Angeles to interview more incredible guests for the show, whose names I will reveal with next week's episode. For today's special guest, I had already heard great things about her, and some years ago, Mindy Weiss had introduced me to her, and we had a meeting, and this is well before I started the podcast, and so I thought of her very quickly, that I needed to have her on the show. It's interesting, she flies somewhat under the radar because much of her business is doing events for a core group of high-worth clients who she does everything for. And so as I was preparing to interview her, it was really hard to get a whole lot of specific information on her because of all the NDAs she signs. And so there's only so much information through the public and her website. So I was really excited to be able to get the inside scoop on Debbie. And within minutes of sitting down with her on the microphones, I knew she was majorly talented and does serious business. So enjoy my elucidating conversation with Debbie Geller. So Debbie, for a little over 20 years, you have designed stunning weddings and events and have orchestrated logistically complex parties, both here in LA and worldwide. And from what I've heard from some very trusted sources, many of your weddings and events are for extremely wealthy clients where you're just, you know, you sign an NDA, you're not allowed to talk about them or show pictures.
Correct.
So I want to break the rules, talk all about them.
I can talk about them, but I can't say names and I can't show you anything, but I can talk about them.
I want to go back because I'm curious how this all started for you. Because I also read that you actually got a bachelor degrees in English Lit and you have a background in graphic design and you're like a professionally trained chef?
That is all correct.
Okay. So first of all, are you from the LA area?
I'm from Orange County originally. So I grew up behind the Orange Curtain.
And the Orange Curtain. I haven't heard that one before. And what did your parents do?
So my mom was a preschool teacher when I was younger, and then she became a cooking teacher. So I was one of four kids and my mom was in the kitchen cooking all day long. And
like her own recipes or would she?
Her own recipes. Oddly enough, she taught Chinese cooking.
Whoa.
So we used to on Sundays make dim sum just because it kept us busy for hours. And I came from a very modest background and my mom didn't really have the money to keep us busy. So making dim sum kept us busy.
Wow. Do you have any idea why she chose Chinese? She just loved Chinese food.
She loved Chinese food.
That's great. I mean, dim sum, there's so many great restaurants. I was in San Francisco and oh my God, it's one of my favorite.
Yeah.
But anyway, so then you started to do this too. That's obviously where you got your interest in cooking.
Yes and no. When I first moved out, I went to college and got apartments after college and never cooked at home. And my house never felt like a home. And I thought about that and realized one day that it's because there's no smell of food cooking.
So
I actually started cooking because I wanted my house to feel like a home. It wasn't actually about a love of cooking.
Huh. That's interesting. Yeah. And what about the graphic design? Was this also something you had studied in college? Or?
It is not. I've actually studied it afterwards. My original degree, as you said, was in English Lit.
Yeah.
I was going to become an attorney.
What?
And worked my way through college by working at a law firm.
Huh.
And literally maintained their library. And as laws changed, I updated the books and, you know, remove old page 59 through 72, insert new page 59 through 72.
Yeah.
And I did that for several years. And happily, I did it because I realized when I was there that no one ever smiled. And I thought, this is not what I want. But I've always loved to read and I've always loved to write. And so English Lit was my major, thinking I was going to law school.
Yeah.
It ended up being a great thing because after that, I actually went into commercial real estate. And did very well at that because I think that you can learn the numbers part of it later, but mm-hmm. you can't learn to communicate effectively. So it ended up being a great major. So I did that for several years and didn't love it. Wasn't passionate about it.
Yeah.
And so when I closed my first big deal, instead of putting a down payment on a condo or buying a new car, I gave notice because I didn't want golden handcuffs.
Oh, interesting.
Did not want to get used to the money and be stuck there.
Wow.
Yeah.
But when you say you didn't want to get used to the money, oh, I see. So that you're making a really good...
You're making the really good money.
And it's like you can't leave.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You get used to it. Your life raises to the level of what you're making and you're trapped. And I knew I didn't want that.
What an interesting perspective. So when you gave notice, I assume you already had an idea of what you were going to do next?
I was going to take the first sabbatical of my life.
Oh, yeah.
So I literally have had a job since I was 15 years old.
Uh-huh.
I would quit on a Friday and start a new job on a Monday. Yeah, never a time in my life where I didn't have a job. So I was going to take a sabbatical.
How old were you at this time, by the way?
I was
like mid 20s?
28.
28. Okay. Were you married at the time?
No.
Okay. So you're going to take a sabbatical. Okay.
Take a sabbatical. I was going to travel because I work to travel. That's my passion in life. So I quit my job on a Friday.
Yeah.
And Monday morning, I got a call from my sister-in-law's sister.
Okay.
Who is an event planner.
Okay.
Had no idea about the industry. Didn't know anything about it. Didn't even know it existed.
Yeah.
And she said to me, heard through the grapevine that you do calligraphy and my calligrapher got sick and I have a big job that's due. Can you help me out?
Okay.
I said, sure. So she brought me a stack of envelopes and I did them and gave them back. And she called me the next day and said, I need to do renderings for a party. Can you do that?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, what are renderings? She said, just a sketch of what it's going to look like. And I said, you know, not great, but enough that somebody would understand what it is.
Yeah.
And so I did a couple sets of renderings for her. And then she called and asked me something else. I don't remember what it was. And I said, can I come to your office and see what it is you do?
Mm-hmm.
She said, yes. And I left 3 years later.
So wait a minute. You also went from job to job. So you never did your sabbatical?
I never did my sabbatical. Debbie. My sabbatical is upcoming. I'm going to do it soon.
Oh, I know. We were just talking before I turned the mics on about you want to do like 2 weeks in Kauai or something.
You're too busy. I like to just, I work to travel and I need to find ways to unwind. So
yeah.
I do everything at 110%. So whether it's working or vacationing, you got to put your all into it.
No, I understand. Where would you want to go if you can go anywhere?
How long of a time period are we talking about?
Well, a sabbatical, let's say a good solid, let's say a month. Imagine that.
A month, I would do Tuscany.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah. I would do Tuscany.
Ah, it's beautiful there. So, okay. So you start to work for her and are you basically continuing to do renderings and calligraphy?
No, she basically said, here's a desk, here's a phone. If you want to bring in business, you're welcome to stay as long as you want. So I didn't have a salary. And I just started cold calling and started with corporate work because you can't really cold call for weddings.
Yeah.
Or you couldn't then because now with social media, we know who's getting married. At that time, we didn't because it was 23 years ago.
Okay.
And so I just started bringing in business and started doing the business and almost as an apprentice.
But can you say something about cold calling? A lot of people are really fearful of that. And
oh, it's terrifying.
See, and I wouldn't think it's interesting. I wouldn't think the way you're presenting this, that it was terrifying for you. But so you would just kind of like go, just cut through that and just go for it.
Yep. You have to. And so it comes down to, I'm going to call it cold calling and warm calling. It's networking. It's putting it out there, what you're doing.
Yeah.
It's talking to your connections and just seeing where you can work your way in.
Huh. And obviously it started to work. So when you brought that business in, were you continuing to just be, let's say, the salesperson, or were you actually handling some of these events from the beginning?
No, I was producing and executing those events.
From the beginning and with supervision from this person.
Correct.
So you didn't get into weddings for a while then? You're saying it was corporate first?
Well, it was corporate first just because that's what I could go after.
Yeah, I see.
And then the weddings started to come. And even today, though, our business is about 6 to 8 weddings a year. That's all the weddings that we do. And then the rest of it is other types of events and parties.
How many total events and parties are you doing a year? Roughly, just roughly.
You know what? I have no idea because we have a core group of clients, high net worth individuals that we do everything for. So we'll do a dinner party for 8 and a corporate function for 1,000.
Just whatever's connected to their
Whatever's connected to it. So I don't even honestly pay attention to how many events we do a year.
Yeah. Wow, that's interesting too. And I'm assuming that takes you all over the world too, right? Are you traveling a lot for this? Oh, right. You were saying that's why you love to also do this.
Yeah.
So, but going back for a moment to when you worked for someone else doing these events, there's still this highly creative aspect of it, obviously, the design aspect, unless you're strictly a planner, you know, logistics, correct, and you're bringing on a team. But how involved were you in the creative aspect? Did you just have like some intuitive sense, do you think?
Yeah, I think I did. So going back to the part about graphic design, because I don't think I answered that, that came later as a response to what was being asked of me. So I basically went back to UCLA Extension and got, we're going to call it half of a graphic degree, half graphic arts degree, just because I do it when I'm not busy. And thankfully, I'm always busy. And the reason I did that was so that I could actually communicate with the people who were executing the designs better.
Ah, I got it.
I needed to learn to speak the language. And I've always had, if I came from a different family, I would have studied art or graphic design. But in the family that I grew up in, those were things you did for fun. Those were your electives. That wasn't a career. And so, unfortunately, I didn't have a choice. And so that took me towards English. But I've always had a creative side. And in terms of the events now, we certainly do the logistics and the production. And I would say that if this is a ship, I'm the captain. And what we're basically doing is just making sure that that ship is steered the way it needs to go, and overseeing everything and coming up with a preliminary design concept.
Well, and I'll add to that too, you're filling the ship up with crew. So you're choosing team, which I think is a fair, that's not simple to me. I think that's a real heavy decision. You know, like I'm thinking on my side for music, you know, when I put together these groups, it's a chemical thing in a sense. You know, someone plays in a certain way, a certain style, they have a certain personality. And I am definitely thinking not strictly of that talent, but how it mixes with the others. And that creates this overall sound.
Yeah, you're creating this synergy and you're putting it all together.
Yeah. Can you say something about that? Like how, when you're choosing a team, how do you go about doing that?
So it really depends on the client. I think a lot of planners have a specific look and a specific style. All of our clients are different, and so all of our events are different. I'm really, really proud of the fact that if you were to walk into a hotel on a Saturday night, you would never know it was
Oh, you wouldn't know.
It does not have a specific look. I think that there are commonalities between our events, but because all of our clients are different, all of our events are different, and the teams that we put together are different. So that's, I think, a bit unique in that a lot of planners work with one florist, one lighting company, one music vendor, whatever it is. We will look at our client, get to know them really, really well, and then always introduce them to the person we think is going to be the most appropriate fit for them first.
Oh, that's interesting.
If they love that person, we're done. If they want to meet a second, we go on from there.
Yeah. I don't know. Do you feel that that's real typical in the industry? Because I know from my own experience, there are situations from what I hear where a planner, quote, a planner will bring on team members. And sure, the client is kind of giving their blessing, but I don't know that they're really getting together and having them checked out. I don't know if that's so common.
No, I don't think it is that common. And a lot of planners, I think, do what's called white labeling, which is everything goes under their umbrella. And they don't know.
They're not even aware
Even aware of who the vendor is.
Yeah. So I really love that you do that, that you are considering, like you say, you're getting to know the client and what they want, and you're kind of creating this team that's going to help you deliver, you know, this vision. Can you take me through the process of a typical wedding for you, kind of from the beginning to the end, how you do go about this?
Sure. And I don't know that there is, in quotes, a typical wedding. Because I think, again, all of our couples are individuals and unique in their own way. And what they need is different. And we, I think, are fairly adaptable to give them that. But the reason we take so few weddings, I started to say, is we want to get to know our couples really, really well. I think that creating a beautiful environment is wonderful. But creating an environment that actually speaks to the couple and shows who they are is essential.
So how do you go about doing that? How you get to know them in that manner?
We are at every meeting they go to. It's literally, it's time. And it's a lot of it, I hate to say it, is the bullshit conversations when you're in meetings. You know, a meeting that could be in a half hour becomes an hour and 45 minutes because you're just sitting and talking.
Well, it's revealing aspects of their personality.
Yeah.
So it's almost like they don't even know sometimes something they've said, I'll bet that you take note of.
That's exactly right. And it's funny because we say that we want to go to every meeting because when you're in a photography meeting, yes, they're looking at the photographer's work and yes, they're looking at the photographer's personality and if there's chemistry there and all of that. they're also looking at, when they look at a portfolio, they're looking at a cake in the far back left corner. They're looking at a color that reminds them of something that they had in their childhood.
Yeah.
So it's just,
those
conversations reveal themselves over time. So we really, really want to get to know them. Mm-hmm. And then we start to put it together. We take, like everybody else, their Pinterest boards and everything else, but we try and uncover their story in a way that makes sense for them. I think one of the biggest compliments we've had is we did events for three families that are best friends in a row.
Oh, okay.
And the third one that hired us said, you know, I'm really concerned because you're doing these other two and I want to make sure it's different. Mm-hmm. And my response to that was, the only way that I can guarantee it's different is if we do all three.
Oh.
Because otherwise,
yeah,
you know, it could really end up being the same thing. And that third client, who was very reluctant to hire us, called afterwards and said, when I walked into my first friend's event, I thought, oh my God, this is so like her.
Yeah.
And when I walked into my second friend's event, I thought, this is so different and so like her. And when I went into my own, I felt at home.
Wow.
So that's what we try to do.
Can you give me, Debbie, some examples, whether it's a favorite event or maybe even those, in just a few examples of how you reflect someone's personality through the event?
So I will tell you about my favorite wedding of all time.
Okay, great.
Which was a few years ago now, but the mom wanted the wedding at home.
Uh-huh.
The daughter wanted the wedding in a field in a barn.
Okay.
And they were just diametrically opposed to one another in terms of what they wanted. Mm. And the parents had an empty lot next to their house.
Okay.
We built a barn.
Oh, that's brilliant. They got both.
We got both. And it was absolutely, absolutely amazing. We actually got reclaimed wood from old barns on the East Coast and brought them out and designed a tent with hardwood floors, with old paintings on the floors that we sort of buffed out so that it looked like it had been there 100 years.
Yeah.
Barn doors on the outside on a big slider that were vintage. And inside, the center part over the dance floor was raised.
Okay.
So that was like a gathering place. And they had a lot more people than they wanted. They wanted it to feel intimate. The sides of the tent were intentionally low.
Hmm.
So it felt cozy.
Oh, neat.
With old wood beams
that
were not structural.
What do you mean by that?
So there was actually beams on the top of the tent and posts. We created columns in the tent.
Oh, I see.
To create little pockets of space where there were little intimate areas.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah.
So normally you think, you know what? I want high ceilings everywhere. I want this big space. But we created something. It was almost like building a home for them for that night. Mm. And my favorite thing there was when the fire marshal came in and he was standing next to me and he said to me, you know, I'm here to inspect a 80 meter by 100 meter, whatever it was, tent. Yeah. The kitchen tent's smaller than that. Where is this? And I said, you're standing. So it was pretty incredible. It took 2 weeks to put up and also worked on that one with a landscape designer for a year to landscape this whole property.
Whoa.
So it was magnificent.
That is interesting. Is that going to be something that we can see pictures of, that particular party?
That one actually was published. I can't remember.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll see if we can get pictures and put them in the show notes. And that was a wedding?
That was a wedding.
Yeah. Can you tell me more about maybe another example of again, taking another couple through their process for planning their wedding that's just radically different from that one, you know?
Well, yes, I will. A lot of clients come to us and the first thing they say is, I don't want a hotel.
Okay.
And I think that's really, really common.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think part of our job is to not sell them, but educate them as to what actually makes sense.
Mm.
So oftentimes we were just working on something in the Santa Barbara area where they didn't want a hotel.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted something that was a little bit more remote. And their guests, of course, if it was in Santa Barbara, everybody's coming from out of town.
Mm-hmm.
And they were going to be taking these people and putting them on shuttles and driving them 40 minutes for the rehearsal dinner and then back.
Okay.
For the wedding and then back. And you know what? For the guest experience, it's not there.
Yeah, so long time sitting in seats like
It's a long time sitting like that. People feel trapped. Uh-huh. They don't want to do it. And so part of our job is to take what the client wants and make it make sense and make it the best that it can be.
Okay, got it.
And so instead of using the money to go to an offsite location and create something from nothing, we use that money to actually transform a hotel ballroom.
I see.
So it was the juxtaposition of thinking you're, you know, oh, I'm, it's a hotel ballroom. I know what I'm expecting coming in. And then it's not that at all. And really educated them to the fact that your guests are going to be happier if they get dressed, walk downstairs,
really, seriously,
enjoy it, walk to the room at the end. And you're going to get more of a sense of community from that. So our job is, to, again, to take what they want and make it the best that it can be.
Yeah. No, I love that. And I want to come back for a minute to the teams. When you're putting together these different teams for each event, right? Is there some particular style or way in which you manage that team and pull them together both beforehand and during, that's kind of maybe a personal signature for you?
The number one thing is we take care of our teams.
I like that. How do you do that?
100% I feed on every job.
Yeah.
And feed well. I mean, we just had a wedding that was a 6-day load in and it was 100 degrees here in LA.
Ooh.
And we were out twice a day buying popsicles and walking around and saying thank you and giving everybody a popsicle.
Do you know what? This is interesting because, I mean, the events that I've been on myself, I noticed in particular, like people that are working the whole time, the photographer, the videographer. And I, long ago, I remember they'd get a nice plated meal, there'd be time. And I have not seen that in so long. I've even heard some of them say to me, I've even heard some say to me, I haven't eaten in, you know, 7 hours. I'm like, what?
No, and when we do a wedding, when we order food for the bride's room and the groom's room for getting ready, we up that count to include the hair people, the makeup people, the photographer, and the videographer, because they're in and out of that room. And you know what? It's not fun for anybody to walk past a tray of little finger sandwiches and go, oh, that looks good. I'm starving. So, no, we take care of everybody, and in turn, they take care of us.
Well, I like the surprises too. I mean, to me, that really sends a message that they care. It's something like you said, like the popsicles on a hot day, something unexpected.
Yeah. It's a simple little thing, but everybody likes to be important and everybody likes to be taken care of.
What about putting together your own team to handle these events? I mean, these are really complex events. I've heard tremendous stuff, Debbie, about your work. What about, what about choosing your own team members? Because I just want to go back for a minute. Again, hearing the trajectory of your career, you were working for this other company. You're step by step, you're getting deeper and deeper into it. How did you learn about the business aspect, which includes choosing your own team, you know, and how to manage them? That whole picture, that's a whole another skill.
It is. I'm going to say it was never something that consciously happened. It just evolved and I figured it out. So I have a very small company. I want to keep it that way.
Yeah.
I've never had a PR firm and I don't want one.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
You're going to ask how this has been successful and I don't know the answer, but my clients want to hire us because they're not seeing our name everywhere.
I was going to say, I mean, I know these are people that fly under the radar in terms of the public.
And we've had a few weddings that have been published recently just because our brides have wanted it. But I can say with all sincerity, I have never gone after and tried to get something
not
published.
Even in the beginning. What about when you were building your own company, your own career?
Nope.
Was it just it just like a confidence?
Well,
that
was also
had?
So I've had this company. I've been in the business 23 years. I've had this company for 17. 17 years ago, there wasn't an opportunity to do that. You didn't publish weddings. So I didn't think about that.
Oh, and so I got it. And so things were going well and just kept going with that.
Things are going well and just kept going. And it's not something we've ever done. So
can you say something about, how about the events that where you do have to travel and you're going to different countries and you're having to find teams in these other places? And I know from my own experience, right? I mean, there's sometimes a very different, you know.
There is. We try to work with local teams whenever we can, which is harder on us. And risky.
Yeah.
But for example, if we're doing something in another country and we're using a local lighting company, I'll bring in a lighting designer.
I got it. So and
I
who helps
bring
supervise
in,
it in a
who
sense.
Who helps supervise it and
you
who
know you're taking
knows
care
our
of.
Aesthetic. We've worked with him forever. So it's somebody to keep an eye on the local team, but I don't travel with a crew of 100 people. Just don't do it. We run really lean. We run really, really lean. When we do weddings, we always have a minimum of 3 to 4 people just because it's somebody with the bride, somebody with the groom, somebody setting up and somebody troubleshooting.
Yeah.
But if you've got an amazing team, hire great people and let them do what they do.
Yeah. Isn't that something? That's something I had to learn and it took me a long time is to really not only delegate, but also then let go.
Yeah.
And not micromanage, which is so tough because essentially it's your name. It's my name. You know, on it, but then to let them do what they do.
Yeah.
You know, that's tough.
Yeah.
What about challenges that you must run into? We all do, right, on every job. And I'm thinking right. a lot of the work that you do, again, they're so complex and you're traveling. What are some of the biggest challenges you've run into and how you dealt with them on the job?
I will tell you my biggest disaster,
okay.
yeah, which was actually my first really big wedding. So this was, I had been doing this for someone else for about a year and a half, and I booked a huge wedding. This was 21 years ago, maybe.
Okay.
And I had charged a fee higher than I'd ever charged on anything. It was my first thing in a private home. Mm. And the client found this home before they found me,
yeah.
reviewed the contracts with them, did the whole thing, signed it. And it was in the contract that there was a punch list that they got to enter the property 4 weeks before the wedding. Mm-hmm. And make sure that these retrofitting and gentrification of the property had actually taken place.
Okay.
So 4 weeks before, we call, no one answers.
Oh boy.
It's 3.5 weeks, it's 3 weeks, it's 2.5 yeah. weeks. I am in a virtual panic. Yeah. I'm going crazy. And about 1.5 weeks before the wedding, I get a call from somebody who is the owner of the property.
Okay.
And I said, finally. And the guy says, well, we have an issue. He had hired an estate manager.
Mm-hmm.
People who owned the house didn't live in the country. And the estate manager rented the house without his knowledge.
What? Okay.
So he was, thank goodness, a good guy.
Yeah.
And he honored the contract. But he said, you know, I'm not in town for another 5 days. And you can't get in the house for another 5 days.
Oh, my God.
So by the time we got into this house,
yeah.
it was 4 days before the wedding.
Okay.
Well, it was in a backyard that overlooked LA
uh-huh.
and with a large flat lawn that when we finally got to see it, the lawn was completely brown
oh,
and
no.
above my knees.
Oh, come on. What?
Every plant was dead.
Oh.
The inside of the house, because there was nobody living in it, was empty, but all the walls were banged up. I mean, it was not a place you were going to have my biggest event ever.
Oh my God. All right.
In 3 or 4 days,
yeah.
whatever it was.
Yeah.
And I was with the father of the bride, and he looked at me and he said, we have a problem. And I said, no, I have a problem.
Ooh, I like that.
You know, we're going to figure this out.
Wow.
We've got the rehearsal here in 2 days. When you come back, this house is going to be in top shape.
And inside your mind, what are you thinking when you say
oh
that?
Oh my God, I was having a fucking heart attack. No, but the one thing you have to, or one of the things you have to know in this business is our job is to worry so that our clients don't.
God, David, I love this. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So I was up the next morning at 6 o'clock. Uh-huh. I went to the bank and I had a stack of cash and I was driving through Beverly Hills. Every time I saw Gardner, I was walking out saying, you know, kind of showing my
Come
money and
on.
Saying, can you help me?
Okay.
And I led a team of gardeners up this hill like the Pied Piper.
Yeah.
And we mowed this lawn. We cut back all the plants. We did all these things. And there's a company in Los Angeles that does greenery for films. And we were admittedly very lucky we were in LA, because if we were someplace else, this wouldn't have happened. And I called them and I said, what do you do on a film shoot?
Wow.
When you have a brown lawn. Mm. And they basically said, we have lawn dye.
Come on.
And, you know, does it get odd shoes? What does it do? Nope. It's, you know, they use it for the Super Bowl. They use it for this. They use it for that. And so the next day I had people up there
yeah.
dyeing this
That's
lawn.
Great.
I was
great.
Still concerned about it ruining the bride's dress and this and that. So we built a wooden aisle. And then we rented all of these trees and everything. And meanwhile, we've got painters inside fixing mm-hmm. things up. Long story short, the father comes for the walkthrough for the rehearsal 2 days later.
Okay.
Thank God the bride never knew what was going on.
Yeah.
And it was pristine.
Wow.
And it was not only the biggest fee I'd ever charged, but he gave me a gratuity that was equal to my fee.
Oh my God.
Because he basically said, I don't know how this.
You know, what a wonderful thing that he recognized what you had to do and deal with.
And early in the business, it gave me the confidence
uh-huh.
to work through problems.
Oh, this was really early in
this
your.
This was 2 years in.
Ooh.
Yeah, this was 2 years
Wow.
in. So anything can be done if you have the resources and if you have a good Rolodex.
Yeah. But,
and if you have the balls to get it
well,
done.
But also I want to add to that. I mean, it's really interesting to me, the perspective you had when he was with you and you could have just, it would have been in a sense, emotionally easier to go with his thing and say like, oh my God. Yeah. Wow. And instead you're like, don't worry. This is my problem, not yours.
Right.
I mean that, and like you said, inside you felt totally differently.
I did. It's funny because we had a wedding recently where the florist was really behind. Mm-hmm. And I went up to them and I said, are you at all concerned? I mean, I'm looking at my watch. Yeah. I'm looking where we are. Are you concerned? And they looked at me and said, yeah, actually we are. And I thought, what?
Oh, right.
Because I was going to them for reassurance. Yeah. And I expected they would say, no, we're fine. We've got, right. You know.
Yeah.
We have, no.
Yeah.
And it got done, but. Yeah, no, we need to own the stress.
What about that alone? Okay, so the pressure, I mean, the kind of events that you are doing, do you feel, I'm not talking about when a problem presents itself, but mm-hmm. just knowing maybe something could happen. Do you feel a pressure still anymore, you know, with these events about just what's on your shoulders, the responsibility? How do you deal with that?
I think you definitely feel the pressure, but when you plan to set yourself up for success, you go into it feeling good.
Yes, yes.
You know, when you've dotted all your I's and you've crossed all your T's and you have a strong team and you know your clients' expectations mm-hmm. and you have managed their expectations, mm-hmm. it's going to be successful.
You know, I would add to that too, because I sometimes go through my own moments. Sometimes, of course, I'm human, where it's something will scare me, whatever about whether it's finances or the business, the moment, a recession, you know, something like that. And I have to remind it and be reminded sometimes even by friends that, wait a minute, look at the amount of years in the career and all that right. you've been through and all you right. have survived and not even just survived, but thrived and very successful. And so right. there's a certain kind of a leap of faith, right? To just trust, you know, if something happens, I will figure it out. Mm-hmm. You know, I've said really often too on the mic that I also believe in a lot of cases, like the story you told, that a challenge could come up and then I'll look back at it later and say, thank God, because that presented another opportunity to me.
It's true.
You know, it's blessing true. In disguise kind of a thing. So I also will go into it thinking to myself, let me find what is that blessing in disguise? What is the opportunity here? Otherwise, I'm going to mm-hmm. go crazy.
Right. You know? And that's our advertising. Our last job is our advertising.
Mm.
So it needs to be good.
Right. Each one. You also, I found somewhere you wrote, if I have a plan B, I won't need it. Can you say what you meant by that?
Basically, if you have a rain plan, if you have a plan for anything, I just think it's karma. If you're not ready for it, it's going to happen. So that's where I'm talking about planning for success. Yeah. If you have a plan B, mm-hmm. generally you don't need it. And there was a job a lot of years ago in the wine country where there was a last minute threat of rain. And I called the tent company mm-hmm. and there was one tent left and they were going to charge for it.
Yeah.
Because everybody wanted it. And I went to my client. It was a bit of a bidding war and we were going to pay literally probably 10 times what this tent was worth. Yeah. And he said to me, what do I do? And I looked at him and I said, here's the deal. If we get this tent, it's not going to rain.
Yeah.
If we don't, it's going to
right.
pour. It's an insurance policy. And we got the tent and we had the fanciest exit to valet parking you've ever seen because we didn't need the tent.
That's great. Yeah. But so earlier we were talking about a lot of the events that you do are, you know, for a particular family where you're doing everything for them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, can you, and you were saying that you could, without telling me names, you could tell me some stories about that, those kinds of experiences.
Well, the experience as a whole, and I love that aspect of our business, and I don't know how I was lucky enough to get a business like
yeah.
that. But the amazing thing is, you know everybody. You know, when you do a wedding for somebody, it's a one-off.
Mm.
So you're getting to know this person, and you're not getting a chance to really learn and say, oh my God, next time for them, we can do this. And here's their particular quirk. And they loved when we did this last time, so let's change it and enhance it
yeah.
and make it, you know, go more with their sense of humor, whatever it is. So it's great that we know everything about the family. We also know their guests.
Oh, and oh, right. Because if you're doing everything they're doing,
if we're doing everything. Yeah, we know.
That's so there's, but how does that affect the party?
I think that this business, when you look at real estate is location, location, location.
Mm-hmm.
This business, I think, is experience, experience, experience. So it's, as planners, our experience that we bring to the job
mm-hmm.
changes everything and enhances it and makes us able to do for our clients what we do.
Yeah.
Our clients' experience through the planning process mm-hmm. is the second part of it. And because their experience isn't just the day of, it's the whole process.
Mm.
So when we know somebody, that experience is elevated every
I
single
see.
Time.
Yeah.
Because they become, I'm not going to say they become our friends because there's a line,
mm-hmm.
but they become people we know intimately well. Mm. And then the third part of that is the guest experience. So the people that come to these parties, mm-hmm. we get to know well.
Okay.
I get to know that guest A is always cold, and I'm going to say to my client, don't put them next to the air conditioning unit because they're going to complain.
Okay.
I know that guest B is allergic to nuts to the point that they're going to have to go into the kitchen and make sure that the chef has new pots and pans. And I can email them the day before that says, I see that you're coming to our event tomorrow. Don't worry, we've dealt with your allergy. Mm. I know that guest C is gluten-free, and I can go over to them at the beginning of their meal and say, we have a special meal for you. We hope you enjoy. Jeez, let us know if you need something.
And these touches must really...
And that's how the business has grown. Because you know what?
They're now hiring you, all these...
They're now hiring us because we know them. We know their expectations. And so that's been the way that we've grown this business. And that's what I like the best about legacy clients.
Well, I was going to say, it also sounds wonderful to be, in a sense, amongst friends. I mean, all of these people mm-hmm. who you know, you're doing their events, you know private things about them. You get
you're
to see them again.
You're standing at the door and you're greeting every guest by name.
Yeah. That's...
Which is amazing.
Yeah.
Well, and not every guest, because there's always new people, but a lot.
Well, and I can also imagine the way they feel about you too, so...
Yeah. Well, we did a party in Europe last year. That was my client's 70th birthday. Mm. We had done his 50th, his 60th, his 70th.
Wow.
Weddings for kids in between, yeah. everything else. Yeah. And yeah. so the amount of joy that comes with that, being able to bring the celebrations yeah. to these people, is just immeasurable.
Yeah.
It's great.
What about also in terms of your personal life? I read, I don't know if this is still continuing, but you straight out say, I'm a workaholic.
I am a workaholic.
And what does that look like in your picture? I mean, we're talking day and night and weekends and just all the time. I mean, to yeah. that extent?
Yeah.
Is it because you love it so much?
I mean, I'll go 2.5-3 months without a day off.
Whoa.
Now, that doesn't mean, and when I say that, it means a couple hours at the computer during the day.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? But a full day off uh-huh. when we're in it and... Because, you know, events tend to get clustered together and then we'll have a break yeah. and they get clustered together. I love it.
So how do you keep yourself energized? Or is it because you love it that it's not like some big drain on you?
Yeah, it's, I mean, look, we could all have more work-life balance.
Uh-huh. True.
But I don't mind it. When I take a vacation,
yeah.
I'm gone.
Do
from
you
it.
Totally turn off?
I totally turn off.
Hmm. When you're doing these destination events, are you adding days? Like I tend to try to
right.
always add. It's like even with the musical acts, even for them, I'm trying to provide them an option to stay an extra
sure.
day. It's
sure.
like you're talking about, you take care of them, right?
Well, if we can, like I told you when you got here, we flew in from Hawaii right. last night. And
yeah, you were there for like a day or something.
We were there literally for 30 hours uh-huh. and it just wasn't possible.
Yeah.
But if we can, we do. Uh-huh. And we'll either go a few days early or stay a few days longer. But the other thing is, we'll charge our clients a reasonable per diem.
Mm-hmm.
And then we will live it
and
up.
And you'll enjoy
if
yourself.
If I'm someplace new, yeah. I'm going to go to a great restaurant, or I'm going to go to the theater while I'm planning.
In the midst of all of this.
In the midst of it, to the extent that you can. You have to eat anyway. It may as well
no,
be an amazing meal.
No, but because I think a lot of us have issues. You know, it's not the easiest thing to take to nurture ourselves, take good care yes. of ourselves. I had to learn that. I mean, this whole thing for me when I travel of adding extra days and stuff like that, I didn't used to do that. I'd fly in, things would be very intense, and then get out.
Right.
And I mean, then I would think to myself, it's fun, but I mean, I'm not really, you know, why not enjoy more? Set it yeah. up that way.
No, we definitely.
I love
definitely
that you do that in the middle with the per diem and all of that. You know, I'm also curious, you had talked about earlier the cold calls and things like that. How do you mm-hmm. feel about networking? I mean, was that ever something that you had to work at?
I am absolutely terrible at it.
Yeah.
I'm terrible at social media. I'm terrible at networking. I am the world's most fortunate person because my phone rings.
Yeah. Well, let me tie into this. You know, I went to look at your website and it's mm-hmm. somewhat bare. I mean, relatively speaking.
It is 100%. It's there so that if somebody hears our name, they can look at it and know that we're a legitimate business.
That's incredible. I mean, Debbie, I'm hearing your whole story, so I'm not surprised that you don't really need an extensive website, but that's so unusual. You might be one of the first or second person that I'm talking to at this right. level who doesn't have a real extensive website.
Oh, I know.
And you never felt like you needed to, or you just weren't interested, or you just have enough work that you're satisfied?
I mean, look, no one's ever satisfied. It's word of mouth. Our business is word of mouth. Mm. And I have gotten two clients over the years through social media or my website.
Just two that you're aware of.
Just
wow.
Two. And it's when anybody calls, the first thing we say is, how did you hear about us? And just two. And we get a lot of inquiries from Instagram more than our website.
Yeah,
now.
Sure.
But generally, they're not qualified leads in terms of our clients.
I can relate to that. Yeah. Yeah, I think word of mouth is absolutely the best. I mean, they Well, that's a testament clearly to how you're doing things.
Well, and we're also very lucky in that, you know, I hear other people talking about what percentage of their leads turn into sales and this, that, and the other thing. Generally, when a person calls us, 9 out of 10 times, they already know us and know that, you know, they're calling to give us a date and say, let's
do this. That's incredible.
Yeah, which is great.
Wow. And how would you define success, generally speaking? And what does it mean for you?
Success for me personally is when I have the opportunity to work on events that challenge me and take what I do to the next level.
Hmm.
You know, I need a reason to be excited about it and a reason to grow my skills and to take it to the next level.
Yeah.
And that's when I get excited.
Hmm. And how have you viewed the changes in the industry? I mean, you've been doing this for a while. Mm-hmm. What have you seen change and what are you looking at for yourself in the next like 5 years, let's say?
Well, the internet has been, I think, probably the biggest change in everybody's life, not just in this business, but it gives us the ability when we're going into a market that we're not familiar mm-hmm. with internationally or domestically in another area to really find the people we need to find. Mm. I mean, when I started in this business, mm-hmm. I would go to the yellow pages, literally, and or ask people and, you know, call a Four Seasons in another city and say, do you have a vendor list you can send?
Yeah.
I mean, you really didn't have the same reviews of people and the way to go there. And we all know that a lot of it, you still need to sift through mm-hmm. it because somebody was voted best wedding planner in Shanghai doesn't mean they're the best wedding planner in Shanghai.
Right.
But, so the internet has brought infinite resources to mm-hmm. us. What it has also done is help us to communicate more effectively with our couples. Mm. It used to be, and I think my couples are tired of hearing me say this, but say, you know, what are you looking for? I want something beautiful. I want something classic. I want something elegant. Yeah. And I always say to them or would say to them, I need you to use adjectives that I can touch and feel.
What does that mean to them?
What does that mean? You know? I want it bigger. I want it smaller. I want it brighter. I want it duller.
Yeah.
Things that are more concrete, because what you think is elegant and what I think is elegant are two different things. Mm. So the positive side of the internet is they can now, instead of dog earing pages and magazines, they can give me a whole Pinterest board and I can understand what they're saying.
Yeah.
The downside is we get people who come to us and say, I want this.
Huh.
And we think it's a much better experience and a much more complete experience when they have an opportunity to have a heavy hand in it with our guidance
sure.
and with our help in making it their own.
Yeah.
So I don't like to do the mix and match. You know, I want one of these and one of these and one of these and let's put it all
what
together.
What do you say to them literally when they do that, when they come and they show you and say, I want this?
I say, well, that wedding's already happened.
Yeah.
And I love that as inspiration for yours. But
as
now
inspiration.
We need to design
I like that.
Your wedding. Uh-huh. My favorite thing is when somebody, because they're also so used to seeing all those, uh-huh. I'll design something, come up with something, and they'll say, show me a picture of it. And I'll say, I can't show you a picture of it until after
the
wedding.
I was going to say, you got to create it.
It hasn't happened yet. And so people really have lost their ability to visualize because they're so used to seeing
point.
These pictures.
Yes.
So that's
well, and then what comes into that then is more trust.
Renderings.
Well, and also
and
better
trust.
Sense
yeah.
of trust.
Yeah.
You know?
Because obviously they're going to see a table set up and they're going to see, you know, inspiration for different things, but they're not going to see their entire party done until it's done.
Yeah. Yeah. So if people do want to find you, clearly they go to your website, which I believe is Geller Events, right? G-E-L-L-E-R events.com.
With an S, correct.
Right? Oh, how about Instagram? Now
same.
That that's bigger. Oh, okay.
Same.
Geller Events. And we'll have all this in the show notes. Well, God, Debbie, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah. I'd love hearing you just being so open about all of this.
My pleasure.
Appreciate
it. Thank you for doing it.
This has been The Wedding Biz with Andy Kushner. You can find us at theweddingbiz.com and on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Wedding Biz Show. I gave you my heart. If you want to support the show, we'd be grateful if you shared it with colleagues, friends, and family. We'd also appreciate your review wherever you listen to podcasts. Thanks for listening. It'll never shatter.